Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sun Up with the Colorado Sun. It's Tuesday, December 6th. Today, we're talking to Colorado Sun outdoors reporter Jason Blevins about a Colorado Parks and Wildlife volunteer who was cleared after a 7-month investigation into a racism claim. Before we begin, we'd like to thank our sponsor, Pinnacle Assurance. Pinnacle underpins Colorado's booming economy with a different kind of workers' compensation insurance, one that puts care at the center of their coverage. Pinnacle has helped thousands of Colorado workers stay safer on the job through expert safety training. Learn more at pinnacle.com. They put care to work. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. In the broad, snowy, cold San Luis Valley on December 6, 1848, a group of men led by John C. Fremont pondered how to cross the Continental Divide. Americans wanted a transcontinental railroad after conquering California from Mexico in 1848. To that end, Fremont, a renowned scout, traveled up the Santa Fe Trail. At El Pueblo, his party of 33 men took on trapper Bill Williams as a guide who led them into the area now named Fremont County. The party made a miserable climb through the wet mountains and struggled over Musca Pass in the Sangre de Cristo Mountains. After traversing the Great Sand Dunes, they camped in modern Sawatch County to consider a railroad route across the Continental Divide. At that point, Williams and Fremont debated skirting the snowy peaks to the south or making a direct assault, and unfortunately selected the latter. With supplies dwindling, animals exhausted, forbidding mountains ahead, and winter's fury unleashed, some days they advanced only a few hundred yards, cutting down trees for firewood. The men ate their mules, candles, rawhide, and eventually each other. 10 members of the expedition died, and the others survived through cannibalism. The bedraggled party trudged back out of the mountains in January 1849. In Taos, New Mexico, Godey organized rescue parties while Fremont sought to rescue his reputation in letters sent east. Nevertheless, the gruesome failure haunted his life. Fremont served as one of California's first senators in 1850, led another railroad survey in 1853, ran as the first Republican presidential candidate in 1856, and commanded Union troops during the Civil War. Yet the specter of his disastrous 1848 expedition always hovered nearby. Before we continue, a quick message. Want to support visual journalism at the Colorado Sun? Here's how. The Colorado Sun's photographer, Olivia Sun, is a Report for America core member. Report for America is a nonprofit organization that helps place talented journalists in local newsrooms, and your support helps make their work possible. Help Olivia and the rest of the team by visiting coloradosun.com/RFA today. Now our feature story.
Welcome back to the Daily Sun Up Podcast, Colorado. I'm Carol Wood, guiding you through today's conversation, and I'm grateful to be here with you today. And today we're visiting with Colorado Sun outdoor reporter Jason Blevins. Hey, Jason.
Hey, Carol.
Hey, thanks for coming by. We've got a great story. It was on our website yesterday, coloradosun.com, and in your Outsider newsletter. So let's chat a little bit about this Colorado Parks and Wildlife volunteer, Dan Gates. Been a volunteer for Parks and Wildlife, I think, for between 35 and 40 years, according to your reporting. And, you know, he was involved in a months-long investigation that stems from an incident that happened in April of this year. It's been going on a good 8 months. Can you walk us through a little bit of the background and then the outcome of this investigation?
Of course. Sort of a sensitive story here, but in April, Colorado Parks and Wildlife is holding its annual Partners in the Outdoors Conference, a conference that sort of gathers all the diverse dozens of different groups and partners that work with Colorado Parks and Wildlife to kind of forward its mission of wildlife management, habitat conservation, and, you know, increased access to the outdoors. And the director, Dan Prenzlow, tried to thank a woman, Allo Lee, for her efforts at organizing the conference. She was hired by the agency early 2022 to organize the event. And he said, "Where are you, Allo?" "Oh, there you are in the back of the bus." That obviously the racial implications of the back of the bus proved to be Dan Prenzlow's undoing. He resigned, big investigation into this. And Ms. Lee was terribly offended and traumatized by the statement. And she wrote a public letter to Governor Polis, asking him to fire Dan Prenzo. And she also accused a volunteer, Dan Gates. Dan Gates has been working with the agency, like you said, for nearly 40 years, serving on dozens of volunteer councils and chairing all these different wildlife conservation groups. And, you know, she said some pretty fiery things about Dan Gates. And so the agency launched this investigation, 7 months, looked into the whole issue, everything. It found out that Lee was indeed credibly traumatized by Director Prenzlow's statements. He resigned November 1. But the investigation cleared Dan Gates. They could not find anyone at the conference or anyone who had worked with Dan Gates who could say that he had ever exhibited racist behavior. And they pretty much cleared him. So I sat down with Dan. Dan said, you know, I knew I would be exonerated. I never said these sort of things. It's not how I am. But he worries about the sort of downstream implications of these complaints. You know, for 7 months, it was out there that, you know, that he was, quote, threat to black and brown communities and, quote, a known racist. And, you know, and he didn't say anything. He just waited for this investigation to come clear. And he knew it would leave him exonerated. They found no one that could support anything like that. So he worries about what this means for the 3,600 volunteers that work for Colorado Parks and Wildlife. Someone can raise these kind of really harmful allegations and, you know, investigation concludes that they were unfounded. What does that mean for the other 3,600 and folks who, you know, hundreds of thousands of hours of volunteer service that support Colorado Parks and Wildlife and their mission? And, you know, Dan's pretty interesting guy. He's, you know, a hunter and angler, and he has a reputation for really bringing all the different sports groups together to work, you know, on a shared vision with Colorado Parks and Wildlife. And he worries that, you know, while diversity, equity, and inclusion are paramount and super important to increasing recreation, increasing access, how can they be balanced with the agency's mission to protect wildlife herds and protect, you know, their habitats? So he's got some interesting questions, and that story kind of, you know, explores some of his concerns in this sort of shifting environment over there at CPW.
You know, from his perspective, what are his primary concerns, you know, regarding other volunteers that, you know, they might be, you know, accused of something? And again, this investigation went on a long time. And according to your reporting, there's many, many people interviewed. There was no evidence of you know, any wrongdoing. So what is his primary concern for his fellow volunteers?
You know, there's 3,600 volunteers, and it's, I guess, 300,000 hours of service every year that they contribute. And Dan was hoping that maybe there would be some sort of middle ground. Say an employee at CPW has a concern, you know, and is offended or injured by something a volunteer says. Should there be a framework, some sort of mediation set up so those volunteers could have a chance to say something before, you know, these allegations go public? You know, Dan spent 7 months under this shadow while he felt concerned. He does own a business and, you know, he works on all these different councils and things like that. So, you know, the fallout of this whole very, you know, offensive remark that Director Prenzlow uttered, there's a lot of implications down the road here as CPW recovers. At the last CPW commissioner meeting, three commissioners said, wow, we really owe Dan Gates an apology. It does not appear that an apology is going to come. That I talked to folks over at CPW. They said the report speaks for itself. Same time, it looks as though the partners in the Outdoors Conference, which Mrs. Lee had been hired to, you know, organize, and she hasn't worked for, she's also resigned, hasn't worked since April. So the partners in the Outdoors Conference for next year appears as though it will be canceled just for next year. Hopefully it returns in 2024. But yeah, so there's all these kind of downstream implications. You know, well, how better can the agency protect its volunteers? How can they get that momentum back with the partners in the Outdoors Conference? And then there's, you know, concerns about just the investigation itself and racial issues, racial justice. It looks like the agency will be doing a cultural assessment in the coming months, organizing a team. It will be hiring a DEI leader for the agency, similar to maybe what the Department of Education has in Colorado, Department of Health. So kind of, you know, infusing some better diversity, equity, and inclusion principles into the CPW's overarching mission. So, you know, changes are underway. And this is kind of the first time that Dan Gates has had a chance to step forward and you know, kind of clear his name and raise some of the concerns that he has with the agency as it moves forward through this, through these changes in the coming months.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you about the agency's DEI efforts. Is this going to be, you know, an outside consultant? Are they going to look for a staff position? What are you hearing from them? Because it does sound like there needs to be some top-down, you know, organizational and cultural changes.
Yeah, and I think that's what's coming. With this cultural assessment, they will be reviewing some of their, you know, what their employees think. But this new position will be a leadership position with the agency, and it will be a person focused solely on DEI issues. So hopefully we can get a more clear direction on how best to infuse these, you know, critical principles into the agency and really how to better balance access with wildlife management. You know, Dan Gates had said, like, you know, sometimes when we're talking about herd management and recreational access impacts, maybe there's not a diversity, equity, and inclusion aspect of that conversation. Does DEI have to be a part of everything that the agency does, even when it gets down into wolf reintroduction efforts and things like this? You know, these are questions that maybe the agency needs to grapple with and show a roadmap on how DEI issues do become a part of every conversation that the agency has. Or maybe it doesn't have to be a part of every conversation. So there's a lot of interesting conversations, and it's representative of our changing times. As the agency tries to embrace recreation and access while at the same time protecting wildlife and hunter access and angling access. And, you know, the hunters pay all the bills at CPW. Their license fees are a huge chunk of that agency's budget. So, you know, how they balance hunting and sportsman access, sports people access with DEI issues and increasing access.
It sounds like they have a lot to do in 2023. So, as you mentioned, former director Dan Prinsloo resigned in November. Al Lee is not with the agency anymore. Dan Gates, as volunteer, what's he doing right now? Is he going to continue to volunteer?
He serves on a number of different councils, and I can't imagine he will not be serving on those councils anymore. That I don't see any reason that he would be removed. If he's been cleared in the investigation, there certainly isn't, you know, some support for him to be removed. I don't think he does not express any plan to leave his 30, 40 years of conservation work and wildlife work and advocating for hunting and angling and the diverse interests that he represents in the volunteer realm. So I would imagine we will be seeing Dan at all the meetings still, and you know, and hopefully he can be cheered and celebrated for his volunteer service.
Right. Well, it's a complicated and in-depth story. I would encourage our listeners to go over to coloradosun.com and take a look at it. And thanks for walking us through these issues, Jason. I appreciate it.
Of course.
And thanks to everyone who helped produce the podcast and to our production partners at Pirate Audio. And I hope everyone out there has a wonderful day. And I sincerely hope you can join us for the next Daily Sun Up.
Read more on this story at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. Colorado is asking the federal government to allow the state to import 112 drugs from Canada at an average savings of 65% over U.S. retail prices. As part of the state's proposed drug import program, the application to the feds reveals which drugs Colorado hopes to import. A state analysis estimates the importation program could save Coloradans up to $88 million annually. Officials said the list was created by looking at drugs that are high-cost or high-volume drugs that Colorado consumers struggle to afford. There's no time frame on when a decision is expected from the feds. An attorney for a Lakewood graphic artist who objects to creating wedding websites for same-sex couples says no one should be forced to use speech that goes against their religious beliefs. Appearing Monday before the U.S. Supreme Court, the Solicitor General from Colorado said anyone who provides services to the public must provide them to everyone, or else the county could again see businesses denying services to people based on their race. The case comes at a time when the court is dominated by conservatives and follows a series of cases in which justices have sided with religious plaintiffs. A decision is expected in June. A Colorado nonprofit is testing an intervention model to keep trailer parks out of the hands of private equity companies. The Roaring Fork Community Development Corporation is under a $2.4 million contract to buy the 3-mile mobile home park near Glenwood Springs. The social justice nonprofit promises to transfer ownership of the 20-unit lot to the residents within 5 years. The deal by the affordable housing arm of the nonprofit Manaus is the first purchase in what it hopes will be a sustained effort to preserve affordable housing as private equity groups snap up Colorado mobile home parks in desirable communities. For more information on all these stories, visit our website, www.coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again tomorrow. The Colorado Sun is nonpartisan and completely independent. We're always dedicated to telling the in-depth stories we need today more than ever. And the Sun is supported by readers and listeners like you. Right now, you can head to coloradosun.com and become a member, starting at $5 per month. And if you bump it up to $20 per month, you'll get access to our politics newsletter, The Unaffiliated, as well as our outdoors newsletter, The Outsider, and our new health and environment newsletter, The Temperature. All three exclusive newsletters delivered to your inbox every week.